It starts off with this very high-tech syntho-sequency type thing, like this. That's the news. Then the strings take the melody.
Well, it worked.
Here we go to the show, episode 2 of How Do You Not Know from F This Movie. Now, How Do You Not Know? It is the world's first, last, and only podcast dedicated to covering the films tangentially and adjacently related to James L. Brooks's 2000... Lexi is shaking her head. No, that was what we were founded on, but it might become something... No, well, when I say adjacent or tangent, it could... Okay, so we cover films that are what, Lexi?
Rom-coms.
Rom-coms. And that is directly related to 2010's How Do You Know?
It's supposedly a rom-com.
We covered that last week.
Yes, we did.
But... I will say that the movie we are covering this week, Ms. Miranda, is directly related to 2010's How Do You Know?
Very directly.
Okay. So until that pattern stops, we are the world's first, last, and only James L. Brooks kind of fan cast.
I'm guessing that streak is going to end next week.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when it comes. But from this point out, my name is Mike D, and I am telling you that I am going to try to link every single film we cover back to 2010's How Do You Know?
Yeah, he has a whole cork board with pins and string.
Oh,
it's pretty amazing.
It is not unlike a Charlie Day GIF.
No, it's not. I think they probably based it off of you.
I am Mike D, and I thank F This Movie for continuing to host this this ill-advised James L. Brooks fan cast. And joining me now forever and always is...
Lexi.
We are How Do You Not Know, and this week we are covering what, Ms. Miranda?
Broadcast news. Beep, 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 beep.
Ready, VTR 1 and 2. Ready on camera 1 with key.
3.
All right, again. And
2.
Get ready.
1.
And cue them. And go.
All remotes stand by, please. Okay, we're going to George. Say, the F-14 is one of the most difficult planes to master.
Executive producer.
One of the most difficult machines for a pilot to master.
I'll tell you something else. You know, I'm getting less and less airtime. They don't think I'm at all anchor material.
I can't believe I just risked my life for a network to test my face with focus groups.
Is there any particular area that you feel strongest in?
To be honest, I was best at anchor.
So, you have almost no experience, and you can't write.
What I don't know, I can learn. What I do know, nobody can teach.
I'll buy you a drink. There's a big thing going on over at the Italian embassy.
I'm not sure I'd be good company tonight.
I am beginning to repel people I'm trying to seduce.
Wouldn't this be a great world if insecurity and desperation made us more attractive? If needy were a turn-on?
Incredible! Who's here?
Who? Me. Let me just be your most trusted friend now, the one that gets to say all the awful stuff, okay?
I guess.
You can't end up with Tom, because it totally goes against everything that you're about.
I was half hoping I wouldn't have a good time tonight. You know why?
Because you're nuts.
He'll be nice and helpful, and he'll get all the great women.
What do you do when your real life exceeds your dreams?
Keep it to yourself.
I can't breathe. Over a guy.
I would give anything if you were two people. So I could call up the one who's my friend and tell her about the one that I like so much.
Now, we'll get to it when we get there. But can you do like that cool synthy thing that those dudes were doing when they wanted to pitch the...
Do you have electric piano?
No, I could do the mouth thing.
That's the closest I can get.
It sounds like SOS. I could do like the Europe final countdown, you know? Like That's about as synthy as my mouth can get.
That's pretty synthy. I think because maybe you were born in the early 80s, like you inherited that more. I was born in the late 80s, so it was not as much ingrained in me.
You think that's what happened?
Probably. You had like 6 more years of listening to that than I did.
Like my parents were just fucking listening to Keytar and it just got in my DNA.
I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that why you have big hair? Because later 80s is more hair metal and that's what the parents Miranda were listening to?
I don't have big hair.
Okay. But there is. Anyway.
I do have hair.
Well, maybe it's humid today. I don't know.
True, it is. The surface of the sun outside.
We are covering 1987's Broadcast News, written and directed by James L. Brooks, featuring one of the stars from last week's film. We're talking about Jack Nicholson, of course. And one of our big questions for the podcast this week
is... Would you say it's featuring? I would say it's more of a with or an and.
No, I think it's featuring in like... The rap R&B sense, like when it's Mariah Carey featuring ODB, and like he only comes on for like 30 seconds.
Yes,
Mariah. Yeah, you know? And then you'd like, go, yeah.
You know what
like
my favorite example of that is?
In music or movies?
In music.
Okay, tell me.
The Counting, not the Counting Crows. Yes, the Counting Crows. The guy with Adam Duritz,
mm-hmm.
And he covered Parking Lot.
Oh,
with Vanessa Carlton.
But the Joni Mitchell one, right?
Yes, exactly. And Vanessa Carlton's on it, but all she does is go beep up, up, up. That's all she does, but she gets a...
put up a parking lot.
And then she just goes beep, 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 beep. That's all she does.
That's Vanessa Carlton?
She gets to do, like, that's her featuring. Or maybe it's Michelle Branch. I can't remember.
Jesus fucking Christ.
It's one of those brunette singer-songwriters from the early 2000s.
Right. Well, Michelle Branch had the guitar and Carlton had the piano.
That's true. I think it was Carlton.
Yeah.
One of those two.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of my favorite featurings on a song because she doesn't even sing. She just goes bop, 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 bop.
Thank God bop. out of Michelle Branch, Vanessa Carlton, and Nora Jones.
Yes.
Thank God for Nora Jones, right?
It's true. Michelle Branch, they're actually all very talented. Michelle Branch does good country music. This is the rabbit hole we're going down. Sorry, this is not a music podcast. All right. So James L. Brooks.
No, I want to talk a little bit more about Nora Jones. She is, of course, the youngest daughter of Ravi Shankar, the famous sitar. Anyway, all right. So featuring, who are we talking about?
Jack Nicholson.
Okay.
Not featuring. Like an and. Not even the whole world, like that sign for and. That's him in the movie.
Jack Nicholson as the beef.
Exactly.
The movie stars William Hurt, Holly Hunter, and Albert Brooks. Tell us a little bit about Broadcast News for those that maybe haven't watched the feature yet, which we both recommend you do go out and at least watch
these films.
Yeah, this
was my first time watching it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So
enjoyed it.
Tell us about it.
So it's about three broadcast news. I guess they're different roles, right? Albert Brooks is more like the beat reporter. Quote,
get on
unquote.
The beat. Get on the
exactly.
Beat.
He's like more on the floor, you know. No, I guess not on the floor, on the street.
He's the man on the street.
He's the man on the mm-hmm. street. So he's better when on that aspect. And then there's Holly Hunter, who is the producer. So she's the one who like...
I want to stop you right there. She's the Southern producer.
Oh, sorry. Yes. She's from the South.
Okay.
Never forget. Okay. Holly Hunter is from the South. Everywhere, every movie, she's from the South.
Her and Kara Sedgwick.
Exactly, right. Exactly. But so she is the news producer, so she's kind of the person behind the scenes, making sure all the chess pieces are in the correct place.
In the summer of 1981, two Libyan jets suddenly attacked two American F-14s
the
flying
plane
a routine
was an
F-22 over the Gulf of Sidra.
Today they
Gaddafi claimed then, as he does now,
plane.
That the Gulf is part of Libya's territorial waters, a view
really
not
well.
Shared by other nations, including the U.S. After a brief dogfight, both Libyan jets were downed by the American fighters.
The name is Nathan Benchley.
Nathan Benchley is at the Pentagon. So,
that's great.
Commander,
that's
it must
great.
Have been a bit tougher today, shooting down the MiG-21. The one you got was an Su-22.
What's it like at the moment of confrontation?
Correct. What's it like to be in a real dogfight?
Okay, after this guy, we'll go for a wrap-up. You'll have about 10 seconds. Ask him, how does he know when he has a hit?
Do you know you have a hit from one of those screens inside your cockpit, or can you actually see your missile strike the other plane with your eye?
That's good.
The equipment is very sophisticated, but from a pilot's point of view, you like to see it to confirm it.
Thank you, Commander. It has always been considered an outlaw nation.
But strangely, some of those who have interviewed Gaddafi find him, in a phrase we like to use in this country, very presidential.
Nice, Jay.
New copy. Jane, Craig, just a minute. Then we're going to go to Martin Klein at State for the message from Libya. Then you're going to have the carrier pilot from the Sidra in time to... What? No! You missed him! We only have 10 minutes left. How can you talk to me about parking problems? No! Not you'll try. You'll do it! Do it! Or I'll fry your fat ass, Estelle. Goodbye!
I had no way. Dear, she was this good.
And then there is William Hurt, who is the charismatic news reporter who makes his way to the front of the screen because he's very good looking and charming.
Not unlike Mr. Ron Burgundy.
I look good. I mean, really good. Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look!
It's as simple as that. There's
it's a love triangle. Okay. Yes. Yeah. But it's definitely the overall themes are about, you know, journalism and how things have changed, and it all, you know, all ends with layoffs happening at the company, and it leads to them all moving in different directions. But, you know, at the forefront is the love triangle.
It's love dealing with truth and change.
Yes.
That's kind of like how I see.
Those themes are eternal.
Yes.
As we'll learn in every rom-com we cover.
So we have a couple things that we want to talk about here today in regards to broadcast news. Number one is, how does this work as a rom-com? Number two is, how do you think they decided to put Jack Nicholson in this movie? Then number three is, and this is all I wrote down, Jane, Aaron, and Tom. I think we're just going to talk shit on each of them and kind of dispel some popular
opinion. I think it's the love triangle.
Okay. Oh, I should have drawn a fucking triangle.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Instead of a line, a triangle would have did you a little bit better.
Holly Hunter. I see. I wrote HH underneath Jane, so I don't forget that she was the one played by Holly Hunter.
Are you sure those aren't my notes? I might need that. I forget who the actors are more frequently than you do.
This is definitely my handwriting. And then I wrote Aaron, and I wrote AB.
True.
Okay. So Lex, you are the resident expert on romantic comedies. I've seen a few.
True.
I've seen Sallow, 120 Days of Sodom. I have seen what's that one that was all the 2007 No Country for Old Men. I have also seen, and I don't want to impress you and knock the socks off you necessarily, but this is a silent film called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. It's German. But outside of those three, I don't watch too many romantic movies besides the ones we watch for this show. So please tell us maybe what are some of the tropes in here? How is this working as a romantic comedy? And
well, I think, you know, it's all in the name. Do you believe the romance? And is what happened entertaining and funny and make you laugh with the characters and not at them? So I would say it works, and it's kind of almost an anti-rom-com because no one ends up together at the end.
Wow.
Spoiler. Sorry. Asterisk. Exclamation points.
31-year-old
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, exactly. So almost in that respect, it's the anti-rom-com because it keeps setting them up and keeps the love triangle going, but nothing happens in the end for any of them to come together. They all become friends. So it's a friend-com.
But isn't that like, I don't know. So I guess when it...
insert
when we
Friends
talk about...
theme song here.
Yeah. But I mean, if any of them did get together during the course of the events in the film, I mean, who's to say that that relationship would last any longer? But here, you know, through this work that they've done together and these relationships they've built, they actually do have, like, love. It's not the romantic love that any of them thought that they were going to achieve with one another, but the love that they built. It's much stronger than what you get at the end of some romantic comedy.
I would say that that's kind of where James L. Brooks proved his worth in terms of endearment, is like there's different kinds of love in that movie. Mm-hmm. And then this movie, there's different kinds of love as well. So the romance is kind of interesting in these movies because it sets up for Holly Hunter and Albert Brooks to kind of end up together after it all. And Holly Hunter is supposed to be attracted to William Hurt despite him being a slightly charming, you know, kind of roguish figure. But she doesn't end up with either of them because Albert Brooks is an asshole.
I've never seen you like this with anybody, so don't get me wrong when I tell you that Tom, while being a very nice guy, is the devil.
This isn't friendship. You're crazy, you know that?
What do you think the devil's gonna look like if he's around?
God.
Come on, no one's gonna be taken in by a guy with a long red pointy tail. Come on, what's he gonna sound like? No. I'm semi-serious here.
You're serious?
He will be attractive. He'll be nice and helpful. He'll get a job where he influences a great God-fearing nation. He'll never do an evil thing. He'll never deliberately hurt a living thing. He'll just bit by little bit lower our standards where they're important. Just a tiny little bit. Just coax along, flash over substance. Just a tiny little bit. And he'll talk about all of us really being salesmen. And he'll get all the great women.
Hey, Aaron! I think you're the devil!
You know I'm not!
How?
Because I think we have the kind of friendship where if I were the devil, you'd be the only one I would tell.
Well, you were awfully quick to run after Tom's help when
all right,
you
fine.
Wanted help!
Yes! And if things had gone well for me tonight, then I probably wouldn't be saying any of this. I grant you everything. But give me this. He personifies everything that you've been fighting against. And I'm in love with you. How do you like that? I buried the lead.
And William Hurt is too dumb for her.
Well, I mean, but do you think that it's... Because when I watch the movie, I never get the feeling that she doesn't want to be with William Hurt because he's not smart. It's made very clear from the beginning of the movie that he's not smart. She's giving that big keynote speech.
Exactly.
And, you know, and we show the whole audience of people just responding to this dumb fucking video.
And I think the reason that he's attracted to her is because she's so smart.
Because she's so smart.
And he, it's telegraphed that he has a learning disability.
Right.
But they don't ever label it. They just say he's quote unquote slow or dumber or whatever.
Why are you so glum? Were you bothered by those waitresses making a fuss?
No. Been honest, what are you supposed to do when people keep commenting on your looks? I don't even know what they mean, beat them off the stick.
Well, if that's your only problem.
It's not. I got my report card. 3 C's, 2 D's, and an incomplete.
I see you studying so hard, Tom. What do you think the problem is?
Just have to try harder. I will.
Yeah, because when the film starts, we see each of these three characters, Jane, Aaron, and Tom, mm-hmm. at various stages in their youth.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tom character, that's the one played by William Hurt, mm-hmm. the kind of broadcast anchorman, he's supposedly such a good-looking kid that these waitresses wanted to rape him when he went out to breakfast with his dad. And, you know, his dad's like, man, son, I can't believe those women wanted to rape you back at the diner. And he's like, yeah, I know. And he's like, you better get used to that, son. Women are always going to try to get into your pants at 10 years old. And the kid's like, I know. But dad.
He's a little too shucks.
Dad, there's something I got to tell you. And the dad's like, what's it going to be, son? What's it, Tommy boy? What's it going to be, Tommy boy? What do you got to tell your pops? He's like, Dad, I got C's and a D and an F. Guess you're going to have to learn to be dumber than most people, but better looking than everybody else. You know? And then, you know, you're right. That it's not that he's necessarily dumb. He's just like...
He has like...
super average. Like,
yeah.
You know, even, you know,
no, but
slightly
I
below
think
average.
I guess he can read the teleprompter, so it's not like something
right.
like that.
No, he's
that.
Not like illiterate.
No. Or... or anything. It just seems he can't quite connect the dots.
Right. And I think
he can pick up on social 100%. Cues, but he can't pick up the dots like intellectually.
Right. Like he can't later they're talking about cabinet members and whatnot. And he has a hard time remembering the relationship to like courts and, you know, other politicians and whatnot. Like he can't connect the dots in relationships. And I think that's a big signifier for that character.
And in that way, Albert Brooks is like diametrically opposed to him. Like he is like so quick and so fast and he remembers everything. But he is not as quote unquote good looking as, you know, William Hurt.
Yeah, but I mean also more than that, I think Aaron has an entitlement issue that Tom doesn't have.
Huge like entitlement.
Tom's
issue.
Like John Hamm on 30 Rock. Like he just lives in the bubble.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's the bubble. He is a doctor who doesn't know the Heimlich maneuver. He can't play tennis. He can't cook. He's as bad at sex as I am. But he has no idea.
That is the danger of being super handsome. When you're in the bubble, nobody ever tells you the truth. For years, I thought I spoke excellent French. Bas up, confond, je fondue.
Whereas like Aaron like has a lot of earned, you know, knowledge and whatnot, but he has an entitlement issue that's like through the roof. And he has that going back to his opening scene where, you know, he's talking to those kids. He's like, you'll never make more than $19,000 a year.
But I think that's also what ends up, you know, bringing down his relationship with Holly Hunter, because he feels like he's entitled to whisk in whenever he realizes that he wants to be her romantic partner and just be like, okay, let's be together now. And she's like, well, that's not exactly how it works. I have to be one willing as well. You can't just be an ass and expect me to, you know, want to be your romantic partner.
Oh, no, for sure. Nowadays, Aaron has grown up to be an angry 60-year-old man on Twitter mad at Rian Johnson.
Oh, yeah. He messed up Star Wars for him.
Oh, my God. But, you know, you really do feel like the film appears that she's going to get with Aaron? Isn't that what you said?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it seems to be like that they banter so well and they have great chemistry in that regard. They show that in a lot of scenes with them being like, oh, okay. Like, they have this scene at the gate where she's like kind of intoxicated and almost looks like they're going to kiss and they don't kiss. And, but, you know, once he, you know, quote unquote, wakes up and is like, oh, I should be with her. She's already with William Hurt and has put her in this awkward position where she has to choose.
I mean, the feeling to stay here is powerful. Why is that?
Maybe the best part of your life is over and you don't want to get up and start the bad part.
You are now required to sit here with me. Come on. Be smart for a second. What do you think will happen to us?
What will happen? Okay, that's very easy. 5-6 years from now, I'll be back in town to collect an award representing the surge in foreign coverage by local stations.
What will they call the award?
The Yuki.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll be walking along with my wife and my two lovely children, and we'll bump into you. And my youngest son will say something, and I will tell him it's not nice to make fun of single fat ladies.
You won't be able to stay mad at me, right?
I hope so.
I don't know. I can't remember the first time I watched it, because that was, you know, back in high school, back on VHS. But I remember recent years, ever since it came out on Criterion, I think like 5 years ago, I probably watched it like 2 or 3 times since then. But I don't remember in any of those viewings thinking like Jane was going to, or should, end up with Aaron. But I agree with you that they have a very strong like working relationship and like definitely like that office crush thing, like,
like, quote-unquote, office wife, office husband. Sure. Like, they work really well together because they're both on that same wavelength professionally. But emotionally, they're different wavelengths. Like, she's... They're both too professional to be personal. mm-hmm. with each other. Like, they're both so hardworking and so manic about how they concentrate on their work life that I don't think they could ever make it work personally.
All right, let's skip ahead. If Tom didn't do what Tom did, do you think Tom and Jane would have ended up together? And of course, again, we're going to spoil a 31-year-old movie here.
No, it would never have worked.
But I mean, within the confines of this 2-hour story, could James L. Brooks have ostensibly made Tom and Aaron, or Tom and Aaron? That would be hot as shit.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's kissing the Spider Woman shit
that.
Right there.
I'd watch that.
No. Could James L. Brooks ostensibly have made Tom and Jane end up together?
He just could have. I mean, but I think he didn't want them to end up together. I think he knew where it was headed. And he had to come up with this, you know, Jane having so much professional esteem in herself and her work that she was so angry with Tom and what he did and how he, you know, made himself cry and how.
Yeah, let's talk about what Tom did. So what did Tom do, and how was Jane diametrically opposed to that?
So he was doing a interview with a date rape victim, and he made himself cry in order to garner, you know, more sympathy for the audience. And she felt that that was really unprofessional, that it was played for the camera, that he didn't do it earnestly, and that he should be, you know, reported to the broadcast news board or whatever higher authority.
Thing has just messed me up. Maybe more than it should have. I'm sorry.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Don't be silly. What are you sorry about?
The way you were looking at me, I just went.
We just need a... We just need a minute more of your time. So he can shoot from behind you toward me, and that way we have some place to go when we cut. And I sit here, I nod my head, and I look nerdy.
Tom, it kills me we didn't get you on camera. So powerful seeing your reaction.
Really?
For a second there, I thought you were going to cry yourself. That would have been something.
Give me a minute.
Oh, it's amazing.
Right. But what's interesting to me is how they write and present that in the film itself, because you do hear they only had one camera when they were interviewing this victim. And the camera was pointed at her while it got her testimony.
Yeah, Albert Brooks sabotages their relationship. She wouldn't have known otherwise.
Well, that aside, but you hear the line producer that was on the set with the victim and Tom. You hear her go, "Oh, Tom, that was so sweet how you cried." Because when the camera
almost
was pointed
cried.
At the, oh, she said almost cried.
I thought you were gonna cry.
Oh,
it looked like you were gonna cry, and then
like,
he made
turn
himself.
The camera around.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Oh, okay.
He said, "Give me a minute." So he's basically acting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand the fact that, you know, it's definitely, we see that nowadays all the time on the news. Like, there is no higher authority for news anymore. It's all played for, you know, who's going to get the best numbers. Same now as it was then. And so he just played that card. I think he's...
called fake news.
I understand what she's doing and saying, you know, you should have more, esteem in your work. You should be prouder of what you do. You shouldn't lower yourself to these standards. But all he knows how to do is get, he's just trying to get by because he's been told, quote unquote, he's dumb. You're too dumb to do any of this. And so he's basically trying to get by in the best way he can. And that's how he's trying to get by. And I think... he's not I guess that maybe there's a line that you can cross, and I don't think he jumped over it. He towed it, and she doesn't. She thinks the line is more distinct.
That answered my question. I'll cut out me saying that answered my question, because Lexi,
well, we, you know,
this is not
the
news. I could edit this however I want. I could cut to me crying.
It's true.
I could cut to you making me cry, and people will be like, "Oh, Lexi's mean to Mike on that show."
I am.
All she was doing was just making him cry.
That's true. That's about 30 minutes that you cut out every time. Is me just making you cry and yelling at you.
Oh, we joke, but that did happen last time. All right.
But the example that they're using for William Hurt to turn into is Jack Nicholson. And maybe that's why he was in this movie.
The Jack Nicholson character is...
It's when do you start telling people? Almost immediately, Bill. I'd like to take everybody out after the show.
Fantastic.
Hello, Donnie.
Bill, what a surprise.
Good to see you again.
George. Hi, Mr. Rush.
Bill, this is hard on all of us, isn't it? No time for compliments. But I think it's extraordinary of you. Come down here for this.
Well, if we're not here for one another during the tough times, we're not a news organization.
Like Harrison Ford in Anchorman 2. Don't roll your eyes at me. I only understand the world through Anchorman and Anchorman 2.
Things make a lot more sense now.
Okay. That's the only reason I know who Drake is because of Anchorman 2.
Drake's in Anchorman 2? I haven't seen Anchorman 2.
Oh my God. Anchorman 2 has Drake, Kanye West, Sacha Baron Cohen, Marion Cotillard, Jim Carrey, Harrison Ford. It has so many people in it. You want me to keep going?
He's not reading off a phone or a poster or anything. He's just remembering all of that.
Oh my God. They eat fried bats in Anchorman too.
Listen, can I ask you a question?
Sure. Anything.
Is this chicken?
Hell no. It's really impossible to turn a profit if you serve real chicken. Mm. Yeah, we use mainly bats.
What?
Yeah, but the good quality kind.
That's the most horrible thing I've ever heard.
Yeah? You gotta do what you gotta do, right?
So what you gotta do is serve fried bats?
Yep. Do you know what they call bats?
Bats.
Chicken of the cave.
No one calls them chicken of the cave.
Why don't you have a bite and stop judging it?
I'm not gonna bite into a fried bat.
It's delicious.
It's all tendon. Look at it. Was that a bat?
Chicken of the cave.
So Jack Nicholson is in this movie.
Yes, and he plays the Harrison Ford part.
He does. So he's in it for maybe 10 minutes. In the weirdest parts, too. Like, the most odd. Like, at first they have him in as, like, oh, a segment on the TV in the corner. Being like, oh, he's the main broadcast.
Right, like you think it's a cool little Easter egg. You're like, oh,
yeah,
they got
exactly.
Two-time Academy Award winner Jack Nicholson.
I mean, but of course, because he's James L. Brooks' like best friend.
It was boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy.
But then he shows up at the end of the movie when they're laying off people. He shows up, which is like the weirdest thing ever. Like, why would you want the person who's getting paid your salary now that you're fired? Why would you want that person in the office when you're laying everybody off?
Right.
And then everybody just like sits around the office when everyone's getting laid off. It's the weirdest like interpretation of being laid off that I've ever seen.
And it's like a super, like Nicholson's approach to the role. I mean, you know, he has the Nicholson persona that we all know so well. But this is like even more just Nicholson. Like, you know, the way he comes in and he's shaking everybody's hand and everyone's.
I think that's like the closest to how he is in real life.
Probably, right?
Yeah.
Like that's probably what
him.
He
didn't have to play a character. Set. He was just like, all right, Jack. I'll give you $10 million. Just come in and be yourself. I'll get you a new suit, too.
Yeah. And you're right. The people weren't nervous because their characters were going to get fired. They were nervous because they didn't know Jack was coming to set that
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
And James L. Brooks didn't tell him. That's
they're like, at craft services, hey, is that Jack Nicholson over there?
Why don't you do your job? K-Sport. So, I mean... But he's in this movie to be the head honcho and to make everyone nervous.
Basically.
Like.
And to be like this totem of what broadcast news, what the goal is for Albert Brooks and William Hurt. Holly Hunter doesn't want to be that. She doesn't want to be in front of the camera. She wants to be behind it.
Right. But the idea is that his – so he's like the big anchorman. He's like the Walter Cronkite or like the Peter Jennings or like the Tom Brokaw. But the idea isn't that he's just that talking head that reads the news. He's also the gatekeeper for who else reads the news, you know, across affiliates in the country.
Yeah, like, it's kind of
like
funny.
You need his blessing.
The part at the end with William Hurt when they're laying off everybody else and they're like – and William Hurt and Albert Brooks are having their last conversation – before the end of the were one of their last conversations before the end of the movie at the layoff, and Albert they decided to, you know, offer a position to Albert Brooks, and they offered another position to William Hurt, and his position is overseas, and he's like, hey, that's what they gave Jack Nicholson before he became the head news reporter. And William Hurt, like, the light bulb went off in his head. They're like, oh, they're grooming you to be the next Jack Nicholson. And it's kind of interesting how those two pass, and it led to Albert Brooks deciding to quit and William Hurt to continue on the path.
So our third talking point, look, all we wrote down was Jane, Aaron, Tom, HH, AB, WH. So I think all we're to do here is maybe talk about our favorite, least favorite, you know, parts with these particular characters. I know a lot of people love the Aaron character. Albert Brooks.
Oh, well, there's no shock that they love the Aaron character. He's modern neuroses personified, basically.
D'abord, il y a cette fille dans la boîte de verre qui dit bonne nuit à demain. Après, je prends mon pote sur la radio locale au milieu d'un discours. C'est le temps qu'il espère au-dessus de son bocal s'il arrive à faire.
He's also an incel.
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay, so that's why.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
glad we have that underlined.
All three of the leads in this film were nominated for Academy Awards in their respective categories that year, right? William Hurt, Best Actor.
Yes.
Holly Hunter, Best Actress. And Albert Brooks for Best Supporting Actor. And
it's a really stellar cast, and they're all playing their parts really well. But Holly Hunter is definitely the standout. She... you know, rocks it. I can't believe that they were going to give this to Deborah Winger.
It's funny you mentioned Broadcast News, because that was the film I first saw you in. And it was this film that had such a massive, important role for a woman right in the center of it.
Yeah, which, yeah.
At that time, did you realize how rare that was at that time?
Well, you know, when I got Broadcast News, I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. And I remembered that I got, it was tremendous. Tremendously high pressure. I'd been hearing about this, the movie, and that he was looking for this leading female role for about 7 months before I went in.
Oh, wow.
So he was like auditioning like crazy. And finally, he didn't find what it was he was looking for, whatever mysterious alchemy he was looking for between the actress and the part, and finally they just went, okay, open up the dregs, let's just see every freaking body. And so then I came in, and they thought that I was coming in for a PA. They thought that I was coming in to get a production assistant job for
really?
The movie. So, no, I'm here to audition for the Jane Craig, and they went, oh okay, well, sure. So then I got the part. It was an immediate kind of thing, and then I was rehearsing, like, the next day.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
so on your initial audition, James Brooks was in the room.
It was Jim and Bill Hurt. They were both
there.
And listen, we started rehearsals like, you know, the next day after I got the part, and at the end of the week, I like broke down. I was crying. And Jim said, honey, you know, why are you crying? And I just said, oh, I'm crying because I have an ear infection and I'm kind of sick. And Bill Hurt said, you're crying because you're scared. And it was just like, busted. And it was amazing that he said that. He just named me. And I was embarrassed, but I loved him for it. Because there was an intimacy between Bill and me. Like, from that moment, I just felt that Bill could see me whether I liked it or not.
And I'm so glad that she was pregnant and did not end up being the Jane character.
Why do you hate Deborah Winger so much? Because you love Forget Paris.
I do love Forget Paris. I think that's when she's older and more toned down. Like, I watched Terms of Endearment not too long ago for the first time, and her character just annoyed the shit.
Oh no, half the first episode of this particular podcast was about how you don't like Deborah Winger.
Exactly.
And here we are again.
I think my next podcast is I don't like Deborah Winger.
Did Deborah Winger ever work with Wonder Woman?
Of course, yes, she did.
She was what, Wonder Girl?
She played my little sister, Drusilla.
Drusilla. For how many? Drusilla. 2 years?
No. She was on for just about, I think, 3 or 4 episodes.
And did she dress up in an outfit, too?
She did.
She was called what, Wonder Girl?
Yeah, I think so. But she did a great job. But she doesn't like anybody, so...
Was she hard to work with?
I didn't think so, no. But as she later told some interviewers, I guess, some horror story about working with me, but...
She didn't like working with you?
I guess not, but I'm in good company. She didn't like working with...
Shirley MacLaine,
Jack Nicholson, Richard Gere.
She has talent,
Dr. Volta.
Right?
Yeah, I think she's a tremendous actress.
Were you hurt when she did that? Put you down?
I was surprised because she was going through a rough time at the time, and I stayed after work a lot of nights, just, you know, kind of being a big sister and having her. She was going through a lot at the time, really kind of traumatic stuff. And
no, she's fine, but just her earlier movies, I don't understand it, and I don't, like, there's just some actors that people will, you know, champion, and you just won't understand, and you can either go off on a tirade about it, like I'm not going to go on right now, or you can
or
just
not
let
one
it...
that you've been on for about 15 minutes.
Exactly.
I've edited, if you're hearing this right now, I've already cut out about 10 minutes of anti-Deborah Winger speech. Here, watch this, guys at home, watch this. Lexi? Do you like E.T.?
No.
Okay. E.T.'s part Deborah Winger. Guys.
I know.
No, this is not science. Like, Lexi just doesn't like Deborah Winger. All right.
True. I don't. But I'm glad Holly Hunter did it instead, because she is great in everything she's in, you know.
Especially crying scenes.
You know how I feel about this.
That's bait.
Yeah. The crying scenes are the worst thing, and I understand that it's a male perspective on being a female in the workplace, and she has to find some way to let her emotions out, so she has to turn off her phone and find a quiet place and cry for 5 minutes every day. Timed. It just seems like, I understand.
Well, until science catches up and she could take off her vagina, like, yeah, of course she needs to, right?
Have you ever met a woman before?
I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Online.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Been in your basement too much?
Nah.
But yeah, I think that is wholly unnecessary, and it's a way of, you know, feminizing her to. Because she's so masculine in the workplace that he had to be like, okay, so she's so strong in the workplace. How do we make her feel more like a woman?
She could take out those fucking shoulder pads like she did.
Well, she's like, what, 4'10"? They have to make her a little bit taller. And high heels can only do so much.
That's true, but she did have like military grade shoulder pads like fucking Michael Jackson.
I know, I thought she was going to bust out some moves there.
She was doing the Hillary Clinton. Well, Hillary Clinton did it.
Her and Joan Cusack. They hear.
Okay, good. We went there. All right, here we go. This is a new feature that we are having on How Do You Not Know beginning this week. It's called Joan Cusack Attack.
I like that.
Jack. No, I wasn't done saying words that rhyme.
Are you done now?
Yes. Joan Cusack. Yeah.
She's the best. She's the best, you know, quote, like, best friend in a movie. You know, how the holiday, there's the leading lady and the best friend. She, unfortunately, should be the leading lady in a lot of movies, and she's sidelined into being the best friend.
So, Joan Cusack, and she does the slidey thing. Come on, that's the best.
Yes.
When she's trying to get that tape. They were editing this one news segment up until the last second for a live news broadcast because they just decided that the return home, right? The veteran returning home, and it looked just like the Norman Rockwell painting.
Yes.
So they had to go in there and they had to add in the little extra narration, and they had to, you know, do the tape to tape, and then they had to record it, do the narration, hand it to Joan Cusack, and then she had to run it.
Yeah, with fake.
Resolve to the Rockwell.
Now, should I...
Just a 2-second dissolve. Jesus, we have 3 minutes. Why do you do this to me? Is it because I won an award?
Homecoming. Norman Rockwell's enduring portrait. The return of a fighting man has always been one of the more moving ceremonies of war.
We have a minute and a half. It's my responsibility to tell the control room and New York that we won't be ready.
We'll be ready.
In 84 seconds!
15 seconds!
Oh, God! You're saying, oh, God!
Lay it in, Bobby, back out.
They're gonna go up and the screen will be black, and they're gonna go to black because we're not there. What about careers, huh? We're not gonna Bobby. Make it!
Whoops.
Whoops!
Bobby, 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 Bobby,
Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby,
Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby, Bobby,
Bobby, Bobby, Bobby,
times with other purposes, there might be a band and bunting here at the bus depot for J.D. Singer's arrival.
Makes Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
I think that guy was Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
uncredited.
I guess. But, that's interesting, though. I mean, going back to an earlier point, is like, if we're talking about news segments or human interest stories, like the one that they present mm-hmm. in that segment, isn't that audience manipulation, though, too? Like, adding in the extra narration, deciding what to cut to, evoking something emotionally by cutting to, like, a painting that people already have feelings about.
That's what the line is for Holly Hunter. That's the line. Is just evoking.
So she couldn't have been with either of them.
What?
Well, that was Aaron's idea to add everything. And she was on board with...
Because I think Aaron would do anything to further his career. I think, you know, he would stoop to that level, too. He just never had the chance.
No, because when they were doing the shit in...
Because, like, he had Holly Hunter backing him.
When they're in Bolivia, like, dodging bullets and shit, and they're like, hold the camera so he can, like, we could show him putting on his shoes. And then he's like, no, we don't do that. Because that was, like, too far. I don't know. I kind of think adding extra shit to, like, emotionally engage your audience with shit that wasn't there for...
But it's more echoing. It's not manipulation. Like, I think William Hurt is more manipulative because he's acting the tears.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what they're doing is capturing real moments and then creating this, like, echo of how it would feel to be there. And I think she was also just looking for an excuse to, you know, back out of that situation with William Hurt. And she found it.
I mean, they didn't make the producer of that segment, like, a big deal, though. Because it would have been the producer of the segment that, like, okayed William Hurt to do all that shit.
That's true, but he should have his own moral integrity that would stop him from doing that. That's her. That would be her ideal and a counterpart, right?
Yeah. I look, I agree with you. It sounds like we disagree, but we actually agree that I definitely think she shouldn't have ended up with Aaron, who's just
definitely
an explosive, violent, entitled person.
Yes.
Although smart, because he does things like get super drunk, sings, and, you know, dictates the news all at the same time.
Yes.
But if she didn't want to be a Tom, she certainly shouldn't be a Tom. But I think he's definitely the better choice of the two. But also, he's kind of like a dick at the end, too, with like the going on the trip.
I don't think he's a dick, but I think he just didn't want to play games. He wasn't used to playing games with someone.
That's true. Oh, yeah, because he just was able to bang that one chick. No problem. Oh, you see William Hurt's dick in this movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you do. Highlight. You see William Hurt's
highlights
penis.
For children.
Exactly.
You see Goofus and Gallant. All right. So, look, we talked about highlights and lowlights for each of the three characters. Highlight for Holly Hunter is, of course, the fantastic acting. Probably the best actor in the movie. Highlight for Albert Brooks for just being completely unlikable but likable at the same time. And highlight for William Hurt, you see his dick.
I approve of all those highlights.
Okay. All right. What else do we have to cover here today? Do you have some trivia about broadcast news? Can you tell us? You're so smart. You told us things. You told us that Deborah Winger was going to be in the movie, but then they cast Holly Hunter. Give us some other trivia here.
Jack Nicholson was not paid for his role. That's good because he only had 10 minutes.
But you're saying 10 minutes like... Like his story beats only are 10 minutes long. He's not even in all those shots. Like, he's not in the movie for 10 minutes. You and I argued about this, I think, off air. I was like, this dude is in the movie less than, like, Judi Dench in Shakespeare in Love. And she was only in that for, like, 2 minutes.
No, she's in that for longer. She's in that movie for, like, 10 minutes.
No, but if you add up just her scenes,
yeah, it's
like,
10
her
minutes.
Shots,
yeah.
No, it's under 2 minutes.
That's not possible.
All right. I'm going to hit pause.
There is nothing like a dame. The Oscar goes to Dame Judi Dench.
This is the first Oscar for Dame Judi Dench, who was nominated last year for her lead performance in Mrs. Brown.
Okay, so Judi Dench was on camera for 5 minutes in Shakespeare in Love.
Okay.
Which is longer than two, not quite as long as 10, but she was on film for longer than I thought. So I would say her and Jack Nicholson were on camera for about the same amount of time.
Okay.
And also...
And now how do you want to one-up that?
James L. Brooks directed a musical.
He didn't release a musical.
Nobody directed it.
That's true. He conceived it.
So you can find the musical cut online.
We should do that. I want to do that.
You can do it as a bonus sometime.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
It has Nick Nolte.
Mm-hmm.
Jolie Richardson.
No, I know. We talked about this
Albert
on the last
Brooks.
Show. Yes. And then if you listen to the first episode, you would also know, too, that I played a lot of I'll Do Anything. And that's why I was sitting here and I was like, oh, I did not think that thing was a musical based on what I saw. But then Lex did her research and blew my mind.
I do some research sometimes.
Yep. Cue Eve featuring Gwen Stefani. Was that the year that Last Emperor won?
Yep.
So Bertolucci won?
And Cher won Best Actress.
Right.
And Michael Douglas won Best Actor from Wall Street. I don't like Michael Douglas either.
That's fine. You stand hard for Ant-Man, so...
That's like his most likable performance.
You think that's Michael Douglas's most likable performance?
Yes.
That guy lied to his fucking daughter about her mother died until she was well over the age of Evangeline Lilly. Like, I went back and watched that first Ant-Man movie.
Yes.
Hope has no idea how her mother died. Like, Michael Douglas
is... a plane crash or something?
Yeah. And she fucking hates him in that first movie. Like, she sold him out. like she's letting that bad guy make
her
the fucking
like
suit.
Main look is hate in that movie.
Oh yeah, no, she
that's
looks,
why the second one is so much better.
She looks like fucking Kate Blanchett in the fourth Indiana Jones movie,
except with less Russian accent.
She should have had a Russian accent in that first Ant-Man.
What? Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, so Michael Douglas is only likable because Evangeline Lilly is fucking stabbing him like in the back of the head at all times.
He's also like older, so he's not quite as like a chauvinist asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like more like, oh, there's grandpa. He's right. Being grandpa.
And he's got a goatee, so you know he's kind of a like dumbass.
Yeah, you knew that already. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Does he have a good? No, he has a Van Dyke. What do you call it? What do you call that? Where it has the mustache and the chin. Is that a Van Dyke? Like Ben Affleck in Chasing Amy?
No, a Van Dyke is when it's like a goatee with like a little like.
Oh, like the LeBray?
Yeah, exactly. Like the a little flavor tiny saver. Piece of hair right here. That's a Van Dyke.
That's a Van Dyke?
Yeah.
So the goatee is like the full.
Yes.
I can only grow these Lumberman Jack beards, so.
That's true. You are one of the lucky ones.
Me and Patrick Bromley. This show is brought to you by F This Movie.
So, what do you think it's interesting that his best movie,
Patrick's?
James L. Brooks.
Oh, okay.
Is based off of his past in the news and sitcom.
Do I think that's interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems kind of par for the course, right? Right, what you know?
Do you think As Good As It Gets is a good movie?
No, I don't like As Good As It Gets.
You
know why I don't like As Good As It Gets? This is so petty. I don't like As Good As It Gets. I don't love it to begin with.
Yeah.
But I hit the point of definitely not liking it because it seems like it has that extra scene added to it.
Well, it does because...
Where they look at the camera and they're like, what if this is As Good As It Gets?
Well, it was added because Jack Nicholson and what's her name weren't supposed to end up together.
Right. And I think it was called like With Friends Like These or something. But that that sounds like a,
but
like
it's
a French psycho.
But
comedy.
Greg Kinnear is so good in that movie.
Greg Kinnear, yeah.
He's the only watchable part of that movie. Cuba Gooding Jr. is good too.
Uh huh. Yeah. But, you know, I never think those are necessarily the problems in James L. Brooks movies. The actors, I think the actors are usually really, like, affable and charming in James L. Brooks movies.
It's kind of interesting that James L. Brooks gets put on this pedestal when he technically, let's be honest, probably only made two good movies.
Yeah, Spanglish is pretty good.
Spanglish is enjoyable, but... If you look at it now, especially with the lens we go through now, it's odd.
Hi, we're here for the interview. Come on in, we're out back.
Academy Award winner James L. Brooks invites you on a journey across the cultural divide.
Whoa.
Gee, what's in heaven? Are you okay?
Don't worry, I'm not mad.
From the director of As Good As It Gets.
What's your name?
Flor.
Flor.
No.
Flor.
Perfecto!
I didn't know Deb found somebody. You gonna help out with the house and the kids?
Solo español.
You work here and you don't speak any English at all.
Save me.
No taking the ball from the dog. Just don't. No fetch. Can you make us some coffee?
She doesn't speak the language. But in a family where no one understands each other.
Mom, it's not even noon. Will it?
She'll fit right in.
Several.
Several.
Again.
Several.
Too many.
Too many. Too many.
He was mad at me as mom because of what happened?
No.
Speed. Adam Sandler, Taya Leone, and introducing Paz Vega.
Well, hola, ¿cómo usted? May I talk to you?
You mean your mother?
Oh, no, 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 disculpe.
Oh, no, 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 sí.
Es que los niños se confunden.
That means they're not safe.
Engreído.
Oh, boy. Engreído's gonna be rough.
Sometimes every family needs a little translation.
Listen to your mother. She knows it all.
¿Qué? Nada.
And Spanglish.
Who was always there for you at 2:30 in the morning?
It makes you think about certain things that you didn't think before.
Yeah, but if you just look at it through the lens of like thirsting for Taya Leone, then it's a good movie.
Taleone.
What else do we got to talk about?
Well, you said you saw this movie a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
How did it hold up? How does it hold up every time you watch it? And what did you think of it the first time you watched it?
Well, look, if anyone's ever listened to one of my podcasts before, everything's very clear and simple in my mind. I'm like Tom. I think every movie's a fucking miracle, and I usually just end up liking any movie that I see. And then when pressed, like when I could tell, like, Lexi's like, I don't like As Good As It Gets. How do you feel about it, Mike? I'm certainly, much like a Tom, I'm certainly not smart enough to defend my position, which is just that I love every movie ever. So I think Broadcast News is probably the best movie I've seen ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
I love it.
But why do you like it?
I love it.
Why do you think that?
I love it.
But why do you like it?
I love it. I don't know.
Holly Hunter won the Silver Bear Award for Best Actress.
Cool.
Can you guess where the Silver Bear Award comes from?
Yeah, I know exactly where it comes from.
Where does it come from?
The Berlin Film Festival. Because I identify with Aaron. I just know everything.
Well, that's very telling.
Now I'm just messing with you. All right. Silver Bear. You know who else won a Silver Bear? Was Ben Affleck for the movie Hollywoodland, where he played George Reeves.
Joan Cusack's last name is misspelled in the credits. It's spelled C-U-S-A-K. This is missing the second C.
C-U-C-K? How do you spell her name?
C-U-S-A-K. And now we're departing from James L. Brooks. Goodbye, James L. Brooks. We're not going to cover you anymore.
We might not be covering James L. Brooks anymore, or we might just be taking a short Brooksvacation. Okay.
Thank God.
Well, thank God, but may thank God. But we will be, of course, always relating every movie we do back to 2010's How Do You Know?
I will not.
It's a contractual agreement between us and F This Movie. Patrick Bromley said, what do you got for me, Delaney? Like, we talk to each other like we're like 40s reporters. He's like, what you got? What's the scoop, son? I said,
I imagine a cigar in his mouth.
Yeah, no, he is. He's like J. Jonah Jameson. He's like leaning over the table. He's like,
striped shirt with pins. Yeah.
He's like, I want pictures of those podcasts. And then I'm like, oh, hi, how you doing, sir? No, I got a podcast for you. Every single episode's related to 2010's How Do You Know? He's like, that's so fringe. I love it. We're doing it. Go. So next week we do have a non-James L. Brooks film that we are covering. Ms. Miranda, what is that?
The Wedding Singer.
Julia was about to marry Mr. Wrong.
That's grade A, top choice meat.
But it's not over.
Relax.
Till the wedding singer sings.
You're the wedding singer.
How you doing?
I'm Robbie.
I'm Julia. Robbie. So cute.
Adam Sandler.
Ooh.
Drew Barrymore. The Wedding Singer.
Uh-oh.
You like her.
No, I don't.
I think I'm in love with her.
Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, February 13th.
Wedding Singer, 1998's The Wedding Singer. Now that you're all sitting at home right now, and you kind of, your ears perked up a little bit. You said, wait, what? How's that related to 2010's How Do You Know? Well,
you have a long time to think about it.
You have a couple weeks to think about it. I know flat out how it's related.
Yes.
Because look,
slide into Mike's DMs and see if you're right.
Because look, I would not have. I'm Bill, the character that Jack Nicholson plays in Broadcast News. I'm kind of a gatekeeper, okay? And I'm not going to approve, I'm not going to greenlight a show unless I can relate the movie back to 2010's How Do You Know?
Yes, that's okay. Exactly what Mike is doing, and I am not.
Well, you're an accomplice. You're sitting right there. You're letting it happen.
Except for this giant wall in between us.
That's true. All right. So yeah, the next one we're covering is 1998's The Wedding Singer. And then after that, we are going to be doing Michael Showalter's The Baxter.
This is your desk. Just let me know if you need anything.
I hope you don't mind if I just take a moment here to personalize my workspace.
If you don't mind me asking, what's the dictionary for?
You won't believe this, but it's actually what I'm reading at the moment. I know it.
Wait, before you say anything else, I need you to know that I am also reading the dictionary.
Really?
Yes. What letter are you up to?
Right now I'm working my way through G.
Oh, G. G is a classic.
You know, I particularly liked the word Gromwell, a type of plant bearing yellowish flowers and
white stony nutlets. I love that word.
Actually, I've been looking for a real Gromwell all over the city, but I can't seem to find one. So far, it's just a lot of concrete. Though I haven't yet been to Chinatown.
So we both read the dictionary. It's a truly bizarre coincidence.
Providential.
Fortuitous.
Happenstantial.
Felicitous.
Another big word.
So let's rank How Do You Know and Broadcast News. Which one's the better movie?
Broadcast News.
Okay. There you go. There's the ranking of How Do You Know.
Are we going to rank them every week?
We should rank them every week.
And then we get to 100 episodes. We should go through and rank
just
them
go
all
through our list. Wait, that I kind of like that idea. Like it, like the ultimate romantic
that
comedy.
Would be the worst bit. People would hate us. They would just turn it off.
Dude, that'd be the most Mike D bit, though.
Like, of course it would.
Like where the episodes just start being like 5 minutes long and then the rankings turn into...
So I'll just turn off my mic and you can just rank things.
I'm just going to rank them. I want to rank everything. Let's compare directors' works. They're trying to do two totally different things.
And so, Mike, where can people find all of your rankings?
Don't fucking... You can find me on Twitter at... MikeD_Splat.
And you can find me at LexyMyranda. Miranda.
And we are both available through the How Do You Not Know handle, which is at HYDYNK.
We gotta spell it out for ourselves for the episode.
I should write that down.
It's a lot of initials.
Right there. You know what we're going to bring the show out on today?
What?
You know, usually I like to do like a little sign off, like it's a 1950s like radio show or something. Yes. But, you know, fuck it. I think what we should do is we should just both say bye. Like, say bye.
Bye.
Bye. And then once we both say bye, I just cut to the scene that we were talking about at the beginning of the show where the dudes are like showing the synthy news score. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
We'll do that. Okay. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
That's a good joke because his company is called Gracie Films.
Shh.
It starts off with this very high-tech syntho-sequency type thing, like this. That's the news. Then the strings take the melody. Chills.